Hold the line, people.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London. Off to my left, far away in the distance, I can see just that faint, red, angry snap of anti-aircraft bursts against the steel blue sky. About 5 minutes ago, the guns in the immediate vicinity were working. I was up here earlier this afternoon and looking out over these housetops, looking all the way to the dome of St. Paul's. I saw many flags flying from staffs. No one ordered these people to put out the flags. They simply feel like flying the Union Jack above their roofs. No one told them to do it, and no flag up there was white.
People like us, there you go. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the English Defence League radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice and the spirit of the EDL. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I've got to thank Dave. Kudos to Dave for the great slides and the script for this evening. So thank you, Dave. Tonight's title of the show is English Defence League Radio Show, The Most Important Thing. Welcome to the English Defence League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell, and my wingman is Dangerous Dave Milner. Tonight we will be discussing the evils of today's globalism against the backdrop of timeless wisdom from the veterans of World War II and beyond. The battlefield experience of those great patriots fires our ongoing resolve. No surrender ever. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. Of course, that was by the late, great Edmund Burke back in the 70s. He was a politician or a prime minister at the time. So there you go. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Of course, that was by the late, great President John F. Kennedy. Two very wise men with great words of the time. So, yeah, how true. And as you can probably hear, ladies and gentlemen, I've got my parrot in the background giving it a large. That's Charlie Parrot. But anyway, on with the shot. Charlie, tone it down a bit. I've just lost there. Charlie threw me there. I'm going to pass it to my dear friend and colleague, Mr. Dave Milner. Good evening, Dave. And, well, and by the way, we've got our first gentlemen in the chat this evening, and let me make sure mighty soon, eh? You don't know, do you, Dave? You know what I mean? Yes, we got that Northwest Media, and I'll come back to that in a minute because he's written a few things in there. So with that, let me pass it to Dave from the great Vermont. Over to you, buddy.
Yes, hello, everybody, and welcome. And hello to you, Jeff, and hello to you, Charlie, our executive producer, of course. And hello to Duck Northwest Media in the chat. Now, if you guys want to get into the chat who are listening, we podcast here live every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. in the U.K., and that is 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the United States. We're on blogtalkradio.com, of course, and also at the TECN.TV radio page. If you want the best in urban Christian conservative news, talk, and movies, check out TECN.TV. Now, if you want to get into the chat, go to the to blogtalkradio.com, look in the White Top Center search box, type in EDL Radio or English Defense League Radio Show, and if you're registered with Blog Talk Radio, you too can get in and talk to Jeff. Now, okay, guys, yeah, we've got kind of a mixed bag tonight because we're going to start off with kind of the tail end, although a very important portion of what we did last week with talking about the D-Day invasion. And then we're going to get into, again, the evils of today. You know, you got to kind of wonder whether or not, in a sense, Hitler didn't win in the long run. And we're going to end it up with some great wisdom from some great gentlemen who served in the Second World War. So we've got a big, big show coming up. But before that, I know Jeff has some stuff out of the chat. So, Jeff, my brother, take it.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. Yeah, I was going to say, let me come back to the chat. It's a bit slow there. As for Dark Northwest Media, gives us a thumbs up. English Defense League, big thumbs up for us. And also, another big thumbs up, Jeff Dangerman Mitchell. And he's got his thumbs up for you, Dave. Dave Milner. And that Northwest Media's Bigfoot. I think Bigfoot's here, but I can't see him at the moment. But he's just saying Bigfoot. So possibly might be around or trying to get in. So just to let you know, thanks for the little comments and the thumbs up. We appreciate that, don't we, Dave? Back to you, brother.
Yes, we certainly do appreciate it, and we appreciate your patronage in our chat role. In case Biggie does show up, but bigfootsplace.blogspot.com is Biggie's blog. Go in there and hear some good stuff. Okay, guys, we're going to start it off right now. This one here is going to be about 8.5 minutes long, but it's definitely worth the listen. Jeff, are you ready for this one?
I certainly am, Dave. Let's roll it, buddy.
All right. Here you go, guys. This is just one other perspective on, a little bit expanded on the D-Day invasion, but it's an important one. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
Exclusive O'Donnell, Drop Zone into Hell, D-Day, by Patrick K. O'Donnell on June 6, 2019. This week marks the 75th anniversary of one of the great turning points in World War II, D-Day. Some of the first Allied troops to touch ground in Normandy were paratroopers. Beginning nearly 30 years ago, I started interviewing and gathering the stories of thousands of these remarkable World War II veterans. They were my close friends and family. My daughter called most of them uncle. Sadly, very few of them remain. Today, I'm in Normandy walking in their footsteps, at St. Mary Eglise and other airborne drop zones behind Utah Beach, hallowed ground where these men made and changed the course of history. This article captures the heart of combat, the raw feelings, emotions, and experiences these men endured in their own words. One of my closest friends was Dutch Schultz, of the 82nd Airborne Division's 505th Parachute Infantry Regiment. After the drop, Schultz found himself near St. Mary Eglise in one of Normandy's hottest spots, La Fierre Bridge. Schultz's story and the accounts in this article are captured in my best-selling book, Beyond Valor, World War II Rangers and Airborne Veterans Reveal the Heart of Combat. Before we jumped, I really didn't realize what I was getting into. I still thought it was like playing soldier when I was a kid. I had a romantic vision of war. We were supposed to take off on the 4th, but it was postponed due to weather. We had a lot of meetings briefing us about our objectives, We took off on the evening of the 5th. At the time, Great Britain was on double daylight savings time. It was light out even at 9:30 or 10 o'clock. We had a lot of equipment, about 100 extra pounds. One of the things that they gave us was a teller mine, and teller mines were used against tanks. They also gave us a Gammon grenade. This is the first time that anybody in the platoon had seen a Gammon grenade. A small beanbag-like grenade filled with high explosives for knocking out tanks. They told us to keep the cap screwed on tight. Anyway, while we were loaded into the planes waiting to take off, there was a tremendous explosion. What happened, of course, was that a Gammon grenade had gone off and had blown one of the planes sky high, killing or injuring most of the people in the plane. There were only two people that came out of that unscathed. They got onto another plane, and they were both killed in Normandy. It was then that I started to realize, hey, this is for real. Later, when we were moving forward, a friend of mine ran across a German soldier lying on the ground crying for help, obviously in a great deal of pain. My friend went up to him and started prodding the man with his rifle, asking for his pistol. The German was still crying when my friend put the muzzle of his rifle between the German's eyes and pulled the trigger. I watched him, and there was no movement in my friend's face. I was both appalled and awed by what I saw. There was a part of me that wanted to be just like him. I wanted to be tough like they taught us in training, but I couldn't. 50 years later, I saw him for the first time since the war at a reunion and brought up the incident. He broke down into tears. Lynn Buck Compton, a paratrooper with Easy Companies, 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment, 101st Airborne Division, who was portrayed in the award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, remembers the action on D-Day. On June 6, a squad of about a dozen men from E Company, reinforced later by a few other men from D Company, took out a battery of German artillery that was pointed at Utah Beach. Easy Company's assault demonstrates how the individual initiative of the American combat soldier and a small group of men positioned at the right place at the right time could bend history and potentially impact an invasion. I landed in an orchard near some hedgerows. It was very quiet right at that moment. There wasn't anybody around. For some reason, the release thing on my chest harness didn't work, so I had to cut my way out of my parachute harness. Pretty soon I could see one paratrooper drifting down in a chute, and he landed about 50 yards away from me. I got up and ran over to him, and he challenged me. We were from different outfits, but I had the password, so we got together. We started stumbling around in the dark looking for guides to get some people together. By that time, I could see other people coming in. The Germans were firing up at them, and I saw some of our men getting hit. We finally got on a road. I had no idea where we were. I ran across a guy from another company. He was from D Company, an officer. He had a broken leg, and he was laying in a ditch alongside the road. He had one of those Thompson submachine guns with him, and I didn't have any weapons because my weapon was in the leg bag that broke off my leg when we jumped. So I talked him out of his submachine gun, and I told him, if you get picked up by the medics, you won't need a gun, and if the Germans get you, you'll be better off without the gun. They won't have an excuse to shoot you. There was about a dozen of us at the time, and it was around 9 at night. I stripped down except for this submachine gun, which I cradled in my arms, and on my belly I made my way across this field. The guys were shooting from behind me, kind of laying down, covering fire with machine gun fire. I made it about 100 yards across this field, and there was a hedgerow here. I looked through it and I could see some Germans were dug in, and I saw these two guys stoking this cannon. So I thought, oh, hell, I'll jump through here with my Thompson and take these guys out. I leapt through the damn brush into the trench with this submachine gun. I went to pull the trigger, and it didn't go off. Oh. I pulled the hammer back, and it ejects a live round. It's got a broken firing pin. So I'm standing there, and these two Germans look at me, and they're wondering what the hell I'm doing. They take off running, so I threw a couple of hand grenades, and I hit one of them right in the head as it exploded. By that time, a couple of our guys came charging up and jumped through the hedgerow with me, and we got into these trenches and were running around shooting anything in sight. I remember there was a wooden carton or case laying there in this thing, and on top of it was one of those German grenades they call potato mashers. It was lying on top of this carton, and somebody kicked the box, and the thing rolled off into the middle of this trench, and the pin fell out. We all just kind of pushed ourselves against the side of the trench, and it went off. It didn't hurt anybody. We worked our way down this trench line the rest of the night. More and more guys started showing up. We wanted to push out from there, but every time we started to move, we'd get shot at, and a couple of guys would get killed in front of me as we tried to work our way down this trench system. It was the first time I saw a person killed in front of me. I got out of the trenches and moved up onto some higher ground. I could see there were two trenches running laterally, and I was up there shooting down in this one direction where I thought the enemy was. These other guys were trying to make their way down into the trench, shooting Germans. Meanwhile, we were being raked by German machine gun fire from the hedgerows. There was just a lot of confusion, but suddenly somehow it all came to rest. We stopped, and we were able to move out of there, and we moved up the road. It was about 11:30 when we were finished. During the course of the attack, our guys destroyed the guns. Patrick K. O'Donnell is a best-selling, critically acclaimed military historian and an expert on elite units. He is the author of 12 books, including The Unknowns, The Untold Story of America's Unknown Soldier and World War I's Most Decorated Heroes Who Brought Him Home, Beyond Valor, and Washington's Immortals. The historian has interviewed thousands of World War II veterans and captured their stories in their own words. O'Donnell served as a combat historian in a Marine rifle platoon during the Battle of Fallujah and speaks often on espionage, special operations, and counterinsurgency. He has provided historical consulting for DreamWorks' award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers and for documentaries produced by the BBC, the History Channel, and Discovery. PatrickKDonnell.com, a combat historian.
And there you go. Welcome back to the English Fence League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Van Mitchell. Jeff, what do you think of that, buddy?
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? You know, through the experiences and, you know, first time the guy had gone into battle, didn't know what to expect. You see things in people being killed in front of him, you know, some things that you don't really want to see happening, you know, like the killing of that German, you know, when he's crying for help. Things like that happen in war. That's the sad thing about it. But it is, that's what he had to face. He had to fight his way through. Thank goodness he come through, I think, rather unscathed. A lot of the other guys didn't make the journey. He got hit, you know, got raped by machine gun fire. But, you know, that is, it's all part of war, isn't it, you know? But very brave, though, the guys doing this. I mean, it must be very scary sometimes, especially you're thrown in, you've never been in action before, and you find yourself, there's fire going on all around you, explosions. Yeah, it's pretty breathtaking stuff. But thank goodness for those brave warriors, because that's what they were, warriors, really, you know, got the job done. Thank goodness for them. That's all I wanted to say on that day. Because it's so, you can listen for hours to these guys talk about their experiences. It is, you know, you're just spellbound, aren't you, by the character of these people, you know, just look at them and think, well, wow, you know, to be there, to experience that. But anyway, Dave, let me pass it back to you for your thoughts. If you feel very similar to me, I don't know. Over to you, Dave.
All right. Well, the reason that I shared it with you and we're doing it today or tonight for you guys in the UK is because it's the raw experience. Because once in a while, when we play things about D-Day, it almost sounds generic. You know, yes, they talk about the suffering and the sacrifice and the things of that nature, but very, you know, not a lot of them will bring things right down to earth in a very raw way like this report did. So it was a very good piece of historical. You know, historical lessons for everyone. And yeah, I think, you know, it brings, again, it brings part of the D-Day invasion home. And so it definitely belongs in our reckoning of D-Day. Not, you know, absolutely not an easy time for this. And Jeff, is there anything out of the chat before we get in?
Yeah, I was going to let you know with Bigfoot, has joined us. And we've got another one of our fine gentlemen has joined us as well, Bring It On Boy. He's saying, hello, gents. And everybody's saying hello to each other in the chat, Dave. So there you go. So we've got our three great gentlemen that's joining us tonight in the chat room. Good to see you guys. Over to you, Dave.
Yeah, and hello to Biggie and hey, Bring On Boy. Always glad to see all you guys. Now, you have to kind of wonder, given the news out of the last few years, why the attitudes of governments haven't changed since World War II, or they have, and it's changed for the absolute worst. And this one, Jeff, I believe I did share with you, but I know your reaction to this is going to be something different. I'm going to, you know, strap yourselves in, people, because this is just a huge piece of betrayal. This is throwing away the legacy of what those brave men from so many countries bought on D-Day. I'm going to give this a start now. It's about 4 minutes long. It's infuriating. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
Immigration promises were a lie and it won't be going down, political establishment tells BBC, by Oliver J.J. Lane on June 5, 2023. Five former UK government ministers have explained to the state broadcaster why, despite over a decade of promises, immigration has only ever gone up, with the answer boiling down to tell the public one thing, do another. The UK Conservative Party tells voters that it will cut immigration, sometimes quite considerably, because that is what voters want to hear. Meanwhile, it sticks to the real plan of growing the number of new arrivals to satisfy the Treasury, whose only goal is to see GDP growth, even if that means flooding the country with new people. This is the story told to a top BBC journalist. They claim, by five former Home Secretaries, the UK title for the Interior Minister with responsibility for border control, who spoke to the broadcaster anonymously to explain why it is immigration only ever rises while the government publicly promises the opposite. While their identities are cloaked and there is a not inconsiderable pool of 15 living former Home Secretaries going back to Douglas Hurd in 1989 they could have been drawn from, there are some clues. The language of some quotes given to the BBC's Laura Kuensberg implies a sense of possession over recent policies, suggesting they will have been conservative ministers publicly professing border control while privately practicing liberalization. The BBC report will make galling reading for those UK conservative voters who have put their faith in the ballot box over the past 13 years, if only because they were a less worse option than the alternative. One of those cited makes an outright admission of lies told while in public office, quoted by the BBC as remarking, "We said we'll get the numbers down, but the country needs immigrants. I never believed in promises to cut immigration levels. I never thought that it was sensible." Another unnamed holder of one of the nation's most senior and theoretically powerful political offices underlines this claim, reportedly having said, "We can't be honest. Want to give the impression that you can do something about it, but it is very, very difficult." These quotes seem to underline a key truth within the Conservative government, that even if a Home Secretary does genuinely want to cut immigration, as present incumbent Sue Ella Braverman claims, this is a task they find impossible because their own considerable seniority is always trumped by an even higher authority, the Treasury. Ultimately, as one of those anonymous former Home Secretaries is claimed to have said, immigration to the United Kingdom is sky high because of deliberate Tory policy. This has been achieved because, as another says, we have put in place the most liberal regime ever. Illustrating the strongly held groupthink by those at the top of British politics, attempts to control immigration by deporting illegals are ridiculous and insane, it was said. Talking about taking on illegal boat migrants, as the government is presently focused on, is nothing more than a campaigning tool that probably won't work anyway. In any case, Illegals are only a fraction of the number of migrants coming legally, in all-time record-breaking numbers now in that most liberal regime ever. While the uniformity and bluntly anti-democratic nature of these views presented in the BBC article may be shocking, it is not new. Expressing the same view, but from the Treasury side, forcing these decisions was former Chancellor of the Exchequer George Osborne, who said the quiet part out loud in 2017. Osborne, who had left government by this point after he and his boss and former Prime Minister David Cameron stormed off at having lost the 2016 Brexit referendum, said of the Conservative government's long-held promise to drop immigration from the hundreds of thousands a year to the tens of thousands, and one of the cabinet's senior members supports the pledge in private and would be glad to see the back of it.
Welcome back to the English Fantastic Radio Show with your host, Jeff Dangerman Mitchell. Jeff, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's, as I've always said, don't matter who you put in there, who you vote for, well, I don't vote for none of them, but they're all liars. They've actually admitted they lied to the British public. You heard that, ladies and gentlemen. Didn't they? Just a minute ago, they, one of them said, yeah, we got a lie, so as we could, for the Treasury. And I think, talk about a betrayal. I hate liars, also have hated liars, and we got a government full of them. And it don't matter if they're looking towards the Labour Party, they're probably worse. They get in power. My goodness, may you all see some things that's going to happen that you think, oh, at least the Conservatives did this or that, but they're all just as bad. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm fuming. But then again, that's they don't care. They don't care about us. Of course they don't. Because they will keep their promises to people like me and other people, you know, who went that way simply because it was the best thing and they were going to cut the numbers of the God of people that's coming across the borders and that. But no, they didn't want to do that because they had to lie. As we said, they had to lie for the Treasury. Unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. And that's what we got to deal with. And I think you got that just the same in the States, baby. They say one thing and do the opposite, don't they? And back to you, Dave. Thank you, mate.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. And yeah, we've got the same sort of mentality here. But you want to, there was a phrase used you know, many years ago when President Reagan was in office, and he was talking about trickle-down economics, which does work, by the way. But his opposition called it voodoo economics. And it's the same thing with this. They're saying, oh, well, we need to bring in people so that the GDP will grow. Figure another system. Because who cares if the GDP is good and growing and all of that when your entire country, the culture of your entire people has been put to the sword, and by 2050 it winds up being the Islamic Republic of Great Britain. Okay, you know, this is insane. And of course these traitors, and I don't think you can call them anything else, want to keep their names anonymous. And of course they don't care. Because they're always going to be protected. They're always going to be behind phalanxes of armed bodyguards. They don't give a rat's furry behind about the people of the UK. And it's the same in Europe, because we've done stories about that, where they've said, oh, no, we need new people. No, you don't. Not of this kind. And it's the same in the States. All right, the only thing, practically the only thing that these quote-unquote new people do is wear down our welfare systems. They contribute practically nothing. And the only reason that I can think of really why this is being done right now is because you have people that are so disconnected from not only their own country's people, but just from their own countries, that they're living in some kind of a fantasy world. And the bad part about that, Jeff, is for you, for me, for the people of Europe, the entire Western world, that fantasy is going to be a friggin' nightmare. Yeah. Back to you for anything from the chat.
Yeah, no, I would agree with everything you said there. You know, there is no fantasy fairy tales where these lot are concerned. The people that have to put up with all this is us, the general public, not them, who create these problems for us, the people of this country. Well, the country's been flooded, they're in their gated communities, and they're all sorted out, they're well looked after. We got to get on with it. And you got thugs roaming the streets, and people are too scared to go out at night. And I do mean around where I live. Where I live, Dave, you know, Ipswich at night. No one dares to go step foot into the town at night now, because it's too dangerous. It's not just Ipswich, it's all around the country, it's just the same. You know, where you got these termites sort of robbing people left, right, centre, and the police, you know, are turn a blind eye on it. That's what you get, you know, and in the end, you know, it's like open anarchy on the streets. But, you know, just like to see a bit of peace and quiet on our streets. And then it'd be nice to actually go to the theatre and not worried about people trying to mug you or something like that, you know, or kill you. But that's what we got nowadays, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what I'm saying. These politicians, they're okay. They'll go to the theatre, they'll go this and do that. And of course they got their bodyguards with them. Oh, they're all right. Me and you, and that's our wives and whoever, we're out, we could get molested or whatever. So, yes, yeah, stop them, mate. You know, it's really infuriating. I don't like, because it makes me lose my temper, and I don't lose my temper over these people who call themselves politicians. You know, because nice to keep a cool head and, you know, and try to keep it cool. It's easy to let rip in it, Dave, but, you know, they don't care. They don't care what anybody says about them, do they? You know? But back to you, Dave.
Thank you, buddy. All right. Well, remember when I said, you know, we... In D-Day, or on D-Day, 79 years ago, they fought against fascism in Europe. And, of course, we were also, all the Allies were fighting against fascism in Asia, against Japan. And many people gave their lives and or came home disabled or, you know, just horrible things. And they made those sacrifices for that. And yet, slowly, the fascism has crept, back into the world forum. And this is epitomized by this next one that I've got. It's about 3 minutes long. And just give this a listen, guys, because this is an important one. You're listening to the English
Dave, I was going to say, before we play that next clip, I just, something that Louise just said, he said, I'm sorry, Dave, I just want to get this in before we start that new clip. He says, here in California, they say, they do your right, they do not care. So it's just something we was just talking about. So there, I just want to pass that back to you, Dave. So he's in California, and he's saying exactly the same as what we've just been saying, Dave. Back to you, brother. Sorry to interrupt you, brother.
Well, yeah, as far as that goes, bring it on, boy. Yeah, I know what you mean. In fact, a good friend of mine, BZ, the proprietor of SHR Media and the host of BZ's Berserk Bobcat Saloon, to quote him, escaped from California. He's living in Idaho now, and getting things together because he just plain couldn't take it. He used to live in Sacramento. So, yeah, man, you know, I got you. I know exactly how you, you know, what you're saying. And, yeah, Cali is in bad shape now, man. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, guys, you know, just give this next one a listen and ask yourself, what did all those guys on D-Day and who fought in World War II sacrifice for? All right, here you go. 3 minutes. You're listening to the English Fence League Radio Show.
World Health Organization to adopt Europe's COVID passport for global digital health system by Kurt Zindelka on June 6, 2023. The World Health Organization will adopt the EU's digital COVID-19 certification in order to usher in a global digital health system for ongoing and future health threats. On Monday, the European Commission and the World Health Organization, WHO, announced the launch of what they described as a landmark digital health partnership in which the digital vaccine passport-style system developed by Brussels during the Chinese coronavirus crisis will be extended throughout the world. The partnership, which will begin this month, will see the EU's digital COVID-19 certification system be adopted as the first building block of the WHO's Global Digital Health Certification Network, GDHCN, which is set to introduce a wide range of digital products to supposedly protect against future pandemics. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the World Health Organization, said, building on the EU's highly successful digital certification network, WHO aims to offer all WHO member states access to an open-source digital health tool, which is based on the principles of equity, innovation, transparency and data protection and privacy. New digital health products in development aim to help people everywhere receive quality health services quickly and more effectively. The European Commission and WHO said that they will look to expand the system to cover additional use cases, which they said could include the creation of a digital form of the International Certificate of Vaccination or Prophylaxis, arguing that expanding such digital solutions will be essential to deliver better health for citizens across the globe. The two globalist institutions went on to say that they will seek to work together in order to see maximum global uptake and participation in their digital health regime, with a particular focus on low- and middle-income countries, which they claimed are in most need of health tracking systems. The EU's Commissioner for Internal Market, Thierry Breton, who has been a leading force behind the online censorship movement in Europe, said, with almost 80 countries and territories connected to the EU digital COVID certificate, the EU has set a global standard. The EU certificate has not only been an important tool in our fight against the pandemic, but has also facilitated international travel and tourism. I am pleased that the WHO will build on the privacy-preserving principles and cutting-edge technology of the EU certificate to create a global tool against future pandemics. Follow Kurt Zindelka on Twitter. Follow a Kurt Zindelka or email to Zindelka@Breitbart.com.
It's the world standard for fascism. You're listening. Welcome back to the English Fence League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, anything that the WHO, World Health Organization, you know, I take me very lightly over the top of my head because, you know, these people, I say, load of the liars, and they're after the money, and they're after changing things. With no time, we should really get rid of them people, shouldn't we, Dave? You know, I mean, they are just after that money. This is it. But that's why I haven't got too much to say about this last segment, to be honest with you, Dave, because it makes me so angry because of the world we live in. You think some common sense, although there is a bit of common sense starting to appear, Dave, you know. I do believe that things are going a little bit the right of things. It just feels that way, that there is a change motivating at the moment. I mean, just in the States, because you're getting it there as well. You know, Tucker Carlson has made a big hole in the Fox ratings. Even this morning, our good friend Rhea Bow was about three places in front of Fox. So that says a lot when you put Tucker Carlson, who's getting ratings like of 80 million. Dave, 80 million. It goes to show you, we're done with the old style type of Fox, the way they've done things. You know, people fed up with that, you know. But I just want to say that, Dave. Over to you, buddy.
Yeah, well, just consider all the stories that we did during the Wuhan virus adventure. All right. These passports that they put on everybody's cell phones weren't used to make travel easier or anything like that. They were used to force people to get the biomod, to get the jab. And if they didn't do that, then they couldn't get on airplanes, they couldn't get on trains, they couldn't really travel anywhere very well, they couldn't go to the clubs, they couldn't go to the sports events. This is not a quote-unquote tool to make people more free in a healthier world. It's a tool so that they can be controlled. Every time, for instance, there are too many freedom marches out there, or every time, for instance, that the people get so uppity that they'll elect somebody like a Donald Trump, every time that the World Economic Forum crowd feels threatened, now they'll be able to pop another virus, another pandemic out of their, another pre-prepared pandemic, very likely, out of their, you know, little closet where their little booger men are, and they'll be able to lock everybody down again. And it'll be so much easier this time because it'll be on everybody's cell phone. And for our American friends out there, my fellow Americans, guys, don't think this won't be in the United States too. This is just plain friggin' evil. And yeah, it, after doing all the stuff we did last week and this last story we did about D-Day, you know, it really does make you wonder. It's like, okay, yeah, our forefathers all defeated Hitler and Tojo and Mussolini, but the new Hitlers and Tojos and Mussolini have crawled out of the woodwork, and it's now up to us to resist. Jeff, do you have anything more, or is there anything out of the chat before we continue?
I've got a couple more comments. What bring it, Boy said earlier, this is a follow-up to what he said, and I was appreciating what he said. He said, thanks, guys. You read Boy good. My wife was thinking they are not going to get that. You were spot on. And he goes on to, and he's put his thumbs up. He said, two more Oregon counties say yes to Greater Idaho. I don't know too much about this. Okay. So I don't know, so maybe you'd like to let me know a little bit what's going on there. And bring on Boy, warning, strong language. The US crappy government, there's nothing too bad about that, mate, that's okay. Crappy government, too cowardness to stand up to Biden treaty signed without ratification. I agree with you 100%, and I'm sure you know, Dave will as well. He also goes on to say, the US does not operate under its constitution anymore. We have not for a long time. That's a few things that he's really motivated tonight. It's good to have you here, buddy. Thank you. Dave, back to you. What are your thoughts of what Boris just had to say? Back to you, Dave.
Well, my thoughts are that that he's nailing it right on the hitting the nail right on the head there with everything that he's saying, and it's not just in the United States. Countries all over the world are doing this. They say, forget the Constitution, forget the people. We're going to move towards a globalist, no borders, dystopian, science fiction-y kind of state. And that's what we all have to resist everywhere. We have to resist it. And, you know, that's one of the things that Jeff's been saying for, you know, well over a year now. Resist, resist, resist. It's all we can do. But, guys, Jeff, let me ask you this. Are you ready to hear some wisdom now? Because we've just finished hearing from a bunch of, from, you know, basically a cesspool full of turds.
Well,
you ready to hear some good stuff?
No, myself and you, Dave, I didn't talk over you just then. But myself and you like to hear a little bit of wisdom instead of a lot of woke crap that's put out there. You know, we are about resisting. We've been talking about it for a number of years now. Every time we start the new year, resist, resist, resist. This is going to be our new theme, and it'll probably continue to be a new theme until we're victorious. We'll keep pushing and pushing and pushing. That's the only way. So with that, Dave, let me pass it back to you, brother.
All right, I appreciate it. And I forgot to say something earlier, and I apologize for this. Guys, I do a Thursday night segment with Ken McClinton, who is the president and CEO of TEC and .TV, on the Exceptional Conservative Show. That comes on at around 9 p.m. Eastern. Well, it comes on at 9 p.m. Eastern in the United States. And you subtract a few hours there for Pacific time. And for those in the UK, that's around 2 a.m. But the TECN.TV has a Rumble page where you can hear the little segments I do with Ken on Thursday evenings. And, of course, again, that would be Friday morning, early Friday morning in the UK. So, guys, you go to Rumble and check out the TECN.TV Rumble page. And you'll hear some good stuff there, including the segment that I do with Ken. He's got some great contributors, just amazing stuff. One that I want to recommend real quick is called Blood Wars, and this is a segment that that he did with Dr. Jane Ruby, a brilliant physician, and it's all about keeping our blood pure and free from the jab, and it's very important. When I saw that one on the Rumble page, this is just the extra listens that it gets. That was close to 2,000 listens, which will give you some kind of an idea. Mine for Thursday was around 200 extra listens. That doesn't count, you know, the normal live listens that TEC and .TV gets. So check that stuff out. The TEC and .TV Rumble page, you can get some good stuff. Now, guys, there's a reason why I suggested to Jeff that we call the show what we're calling it here. Okay, and you're going to hear the reason for that right now. This is about 2.5 minutes. You're listening to the English Defense League Radio Show.
World War II Veteran Turns 100 Shares the Most Important Thing, by Michael Foster, on April 9, 2023. A South Carolina World War II veteran recently recounted his eventful life and shared some timeless advice on his 100th birthday. John Holliday, who was born April 7, 1923, began his stint in the military at 19, undertaking basic training in Miami, WizTV reported. An Amazon description of his autobiography notes he served in World War II during the 1940s, where he flew airplanes and also served in the infantry. Speaking with WizTV, Holliday related his experience as a pilot in a self-deprecating way. "I wasn't a good pilot," he said. "I got lost all of the time flying." He even recalled the time he was flying at night and landed on his instructor's plane, to the instructor's extreme displeasure, for WizTV. However, he explained to the outlet, he later transferred to the infantry, attended officer candidate school, and served in multiple capacities in a service company. When he returned from service, he enrolled in the University of South Carolina, where he completed his education. The description of his autobiography reads, "He then worked in the finance industry for 40 years. The last 27 of them were with the South Carolina National Bank. After retirement from them, he worked for Thompson Funeral Home, Coleman Harmon Funeral Home, and Temples Halloran Funeral Home." A 2008 resolution adopted by the South Carolina House of Representatives congratulated Holliday and his wife, Laura, on their 50th wedding anniversary. The resolution noted in addition to Holiday's military career, he was also a boxer in high school and college, became the Army lightweight champion, and boxed professionally for a time. In addition, it states he was instrumental in founding the state's boxing commission, became an executive at South Carolina National Bank, authored 3 books, and even did some stage acting. WIS TV noted Holiday has 4 children, 6 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. He left the outlet with some advice after a century of life experience. Know what you're supposed to do, that's the most important thing. Learn what you're supposed to do and then do it, he said.
What?
And that's it. Welcome back to the English Smith League Radio Show with host Jeff.
What an amazing gentleman. Yeah, Dave, I was just going to say, what an amazing gentleman. What a career he had. You know, so many things he'd done in his 100 years is absolutely magical, you know, to survive, you know, the war, to go on to do better things. And to enjoy it, it seemed like he was enjoying his life. As I say, during the war time, it's a bit scary, a bit airy, but he come through it, and he went on to do better things. And he was a professional boxer, and so he's done a lot of things with his life. So he should be honoured for the great what he's done during the war. And after the war, certain things he's done. So isn't it great? If you check up on a man's life, 100 years, and it's been for service. He served his country well. Yeah, he has. Let's put it where it is. He served his country well. He enjoyed what he'd done, and he got on and he done it. There you go, Dave. Back to you, brother. You know, what a gentleman. Like
me,
shake his hand, mate.
Yeah, well, Jeff, you're right about that. And, just his advice, learn what you're supposed to do and then do it. So many people don't do that these days. They kind of drift around and things like that. And sometimes the learning takes a long time. I mean, I didn't start doing a podcast until I was in my 50s. Tell you something right there, but guys like this just met life head on and lived it, and he lived a long and good life. And yeah, his advice is advice that I think everyone can take and I think use in their lives. And Jeff, do we have anything out of the chat before we get to our next person who decided to, found out what he needed to do and did it? Got anything else out of the chat?
Yeah, as I say, from what was commenting and what Boy said earlier, he said, welcome and thank you. He also goes on to say, too bad we had no way to clone them like him. Men like him. Sorry, I misspelled. Clone men like him. I agree, boy. He also goes on to say, there are few left in this world. I think we are all here today. Laugh out loud. There you go. But thanks for that. Yeah, we do our best, don't we? You know what I mean, boy? We do our best. Summer's got to speak the truth. And that's why we love doing what we do. We love doing what we do because the truth needs to be spoke. Back to you, Dave.
All righty. Yep. Well, that's a heck of a compliment, bringing our boy in. And we do what we can within what we can do. All right. So this next one is about 2 minutes. And it shows that not everyone has given up their appreciation for these men who led these incredible lives. I'm going to go ahead and hit this one. You guys are listening to the English Defense League Radio Show. Grab your caps and gowns, everybody.
Kansas Marine Corps Veteran Graduates High School 78 Years Later, by Elaine Mallon on May 14, 2023. In the sea of blue caps and gowns at Halsted High School's graduation in Halsted, Kansas, Wilbur Noctegal blended in with the youthful graduates until he rolled his electric scooter across the stage to accept his diploma. At 95 years old, Noctegal graduated from high school, as reported by Kake. "I'm probably the only 95-year-old graduate they've had," Noctegal said. At 17, the Marine Corps veteran left school to serve in World War II. During his service, Noctegal obtained the rank of Private First Class. Now 78 years after earning his Eagle Globe and Anchor, Noctegal has earned his high school degree. "Over 400 of these diplomas were issued today," Noctegal said. "I'm proud that I got one. Reluctant to do it, but I finally went ahead with it." Just a few weeks before the ceremony, Noctegal reached out to the school's principal, Chad Bauman, as reported by KSN. After consulting with the school board, Bauman said there was no doubt Halsted High School wanted to award Noctegal, who would have been a graduate in the class of 1946, his long-awaited diploma. While the grandparents of Noctegal's fellow graduates sat in the stands, five of Noctegal's great-grandchildren were there cheering him on. His granddaughter, Hillary Cardenas, said she could not be more proud of her grandfather. "He's very smart, he's very astute. He's a mechanic, he's helped this town. They all used to know where he lives, he knows everybody. So, for him to have this honor is just such a beautiful thing," Cardenas told KSN. Noctegal said serving in the Marine Corps has been one of his highest honors. "I think every Marine is proud of the Corps, and I just hope I set a good example for younger ones."
I think you did. Yeah, welcome back to the Evening Spence Secret Radio Show with your host, Jeff Dagerman Mitchell. Jeff,
he certainly did. And I'd love to hear that, where his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, was cheering him on as this diploma was handed over to him. God bless him, and God bless his family. I mean, they're so proud. And he does seem to be very much a community man. It seems the community love him. He's always doing something. Mechanic as well, he said he does. So he's always been there for the community. And it's such important that you get characters like that that do live in communities, who do their best, who love to do the things like that. And God bless him and his family, Dave. Thank you, mate.
All right, Jeff. Yeah, you know what? It's amazing. He joined the Marines and was part of the backbone of our armed forces here. And what does he do? He comes back home and he becomes a vital part of our infrastructure here, being a mechanic as well. I mean, these are the people that I love to see honored. And I'm not taking anything away from the college graduates who were, you know, involved in business and things like that. They have their place in our societies, and you know, our societies can't run without them. But take away the electricians, the carpenters, the plumbers, the mechanics, and ain't nothing moving no place. Okay, so
yeah, it
was quite a pleasure to do, Jeff. This was quite a pleasure to do. Do we have anything out of chat before we hit the next one? Because the next one is very cool as
look.
Well.
Just bear with me. No, it's just the same as what the last thing that a boy said. And also, I know his wife listens to the show. He said, "Oh, just as I said that." And I want to say hi to the boy's wife as well, because I know she listens to the show. He says, good on him for his accomplishments. He fought and lived for everything he is, was deserving of. Well said, brother. Well said. Back to you, Dave.
Yes, and I also want to say hello to the missus. Hello. I don't want to call you Mrs. Boy, but, you know... Hello, man. Hope you're enjoying the show. All right. Now, this next one is pretty cool. This is about just over 3 minutes. Definitely worth a listen. You guys are listening to the English Defense You guys are listening to the English Defense League Radio Show.
102-year-old World War II veteran, Tuskegee Airman honored in Nevada, "It Makes You Feel Very Humble," by Michael Foster on April 2, 2023. A 102-year-old World War II veteran who served as one of the famed Tuskegee Airmen was honored in Henderson, Nevada, on Wednesday. The Nevada Department of Veterans Services, NDVS, noted that a group of veterans were honored at a ceremony at Prestige Assisted Living at Mira Loma in Henderson, Nevada, on Wednesday, March 29. One of the veterans who were honored was Lieutenant Colonel Lester McCants, a World War II veteran who trained as one of the first 100 pilots in the 1st Tuskegee Airmen. As the National Air and Space Museum at the Smithsonian Institution explained, the Tuskegee Airmen were the first black pilots in the history of the United States military. In 1941, the U.S. Army Air Corps, predecessor to the modern-day U.S. Air Force, was a segregated part of the military. With World War II near at hand, it was decided to offer training to African Americans as pilots and mechanics. The new air base at Tuskegee, Alabama, became the center for the training program of black air personnel. Called the Tuskegee Airmen, these airmen made a pioneering contribution to the war and the subsequent drive to end racial segregation in the American Armed Forces. A newspaper transcript archived by the Smithsonian Institution revealed that after being commissioned as an officer, McCants had to stop at Harlem Airport, where he enjoyed the company of many service members while waiting to receive a new flying permit. McCants was pictured in the member directory of the Sam Bruce chapter of Tuskegee Airmen Incorporated. The assisted living community where the ceremony was held noted that McCants went on to serve his country for 2 decades. Mr. McCants was one of the first black pilots to fly solo from the U.S. to Asia. He also served in Germany, 1946, Japan, 1953, Korea, 1954, Lebanon, 1958, and Cuba, 1963. During his career, he received numerous awards: Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal, Army Aviator Badge, Senior Army Aviator Badge, World War II Victory Medal, Italian Merit of War, and Air Med, just to name a few. The community also indicated McCants had received commendations from former President Barack Obama and spent much of his retirement traveling with his wife. After serving his country in the air, later in life Lester and his late wife Lucy saw the world by sea, as the couple loved taking cruises around the world, the community wrote. McCants told KTNV that he enjoyed the event and is grateful to be recognized for his service. "The recall from guys that I work with, the people I served with, it makes you feel very humble," he said. "Just seeming happy to be here, to be with new friends and to receive the accolades, it's really outstanding. Thank you very much."
And there you go. Welcome back to the English Defense League Radio Show with the old Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. Jeff?
Yeah, I think we ought to give the guy... Can we give him the applause, Dave? Let's give the guy an applause. He's done very well. There we go. And that applause goes to the rest of the gentlemen that we've been discussing this evening. It's only right, I mean, you know, it does. As you said, it makes him very humble. Well, it's very humble to listen to these gentlemen for doing what they've done, for serving their country, pioneering what they've done. So well done, and thank you. And thank you for the work, for the country. Back to you, Dave.
All right, Jeff. Yeah, and, you know, it really is amazing because you know that Colonel McCants, during his career and even the times he'd come back home and things like that, he experienced, a certain amount of racism and things of that nature. But all of those people who participated in that Tuskegee program, the airmen and the mechanics, had to go through all sorts of crap, especially the pilot, just for the privilege of being shot at. And that makes their contribution, I think, doubly important. And yeah. it is nice to see these people honored as they should be, because so many people today who style themselves as being in charge and style themselves as leaders have dropped the ball. That's an expression we have here in the United States. You know, they're just not doing it. And quite frankly, the same individuals that came up with these Wuhan virus passports and the immigration policy in the UK and the States, quite frankly, they don't even have it in them to polish Colonel McCance's shoes. So, you know, there's that. Jeff, do we have anything out of chat before we get to our final item for the evening?
We certainly have, Dave. Boy, I'm glad that you're here tonight. And he's really engaged with the conversation that we're having today about the veterans. He goes on to say from earlier, hello, definitely worth the listen. And he also goes on to say, yeah, guys, I can't take all the credits with the blistering comments, but I try. There is some that passed over that deserve the rewards. Yeah, and we know. And that is one of the reasons why I give the applause for people that have passed before us. But we want to, you know, remember them all. You know, for few of the gentlemen, few of the veterans that we've talked about, there's thousands upon thousands of others. So that's why I put an applause up for everybody that was engaged and working so hard for their countries. True patriots. God bless them. Back to you, Dave.
All right. Well, guys, there's one more that deserved that round of applause as well. And this shows you the brotherhood in the military services around the world when it comes to the allies. We just heard from a couple of guys who served in World War II, and of course Colonel McCance served well beyond that with distinction. But that kind of brotherhood and dedication to the community is marked in this next one that's about 2.25 minutes long. So give this a listen, guys. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
Marine praised for locating missing Florida toddler. I said a prayer before I found him. By Amy Furr on February 25, 2023. A United States Marine veteran was showered with thanks and praise on Friday when he found a 2-year-old boy who went missing in Brooksville, Florida, the day before. I said a prayer about 10 minutes before I found him, Broin Link said, according to NBC Miami. Approximately 500 people, along with law enforcement, had been looking for little Joshua J.J. Rollins once his parents reported the child was missing. He apparently left home while one of his parents was resting. The Hernando County Sheriff's Office shared a photo of Link holding the little boy, adding JJ was doing well, even though he had been outside overnight. The child was found a good distance away and ended up in the woods. The Sheriff's Office also posted the emotional 911 recording of when Link discovered JJ. Hey, I found him, he told the dispatcher, then relayed his location. In the background, the child is heard asking for his mother. He's alive, he's well. We're giving him some water and he's wanting mama, Link noted on the call. Moments later, a woman is heard crying out, are you okay, baby? When speaking with reporters after the rescue, Hernando County Sheriff Al Ninhu has announced the good news, adding JJ appeared to be fine. I was hoping and praying for a miracle. I certainly was not expecting one, but I think a lot of people were praying, and prayer works. That's all I got to say. So thank you all for coming out and helping. The sheriff said the child was found far north of his residence. But the good news is, he did not end up in any water, obviously, and he was not abducted. According to WFLA, Link had prepared his boat for a fishing trip, but something told him he needed to join the volunteers in their search for the missing boy. I came upon some woods, and I listened good. I heard like a whimpering kind of noise, and at that point, I was like, there's no other kids here. It's gotta be JJ's, Link recalled, adding, He was happy to see me.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. And welcome back to the English Fence League Radio Show. We host Jeff, Benjamin Mitchell.
Well, Jeff, what a story. Sorry, Dad, did I talk over then? Sorry, mate.
No, I'm just asking what you think.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, as though, you know, like he was guided. He was meant to be there. That's what he said. He was meant to be there. Sometimes you are guided. You are guided. There is the powers be that send you somewhere to be at the right time, at the right place. And that is exactly what that gentleman was there to do, to find that little child. Absolutely fantastic to know that he come of no harm, probably a bit thirsty and that, and he was reunited with his mum and his family. And well done for that gentleman. Well done. Back to you, Dave.
All right, Jeff, yeah. Yeah, it's it is a heartwarming story, yes it is. But it, again, it just shows that when these guys and women and sign up for the service, when they take the oath, it's also an oath to the people of their nations. And this particular guy didn't forget that oath. And they never do. Our friend, the underground professor, said so himself. He said, no, when you take that oath, it's forever. So that's the kind of wisdom that we want to leave you guys with, that kind of wisdom and dedication. Yes, there's evil in the world, but there are still good people around who are doing what they can to resist.
Well, we find Dave, you know, I've got to agree with you that we know there's a lot of evil out there. But all of a sudden, things like you hear that story there, that really gives you faith in humanity, and it does warm the cockles of your heart, doesn't it, to hear stories like that of a guy just realizing, a veteran realizing, I've got to be there. I've been guided. It's like he's guided, but he was headed towards the wood. It's, you know, it's maybe you are guided. It's certain to be at a certain time and place at the right time. Is how many times we stories like that? Don't know why I was being there, but I just turned up. With stories like that, many times I've heard stories very similar, but I bet that guy found that kid. I bet he was well over the moon. See the baby reunited with his mum. What a wonderful story! And some of the things we've been doing tonight, I hope the gentlemen in the chat have been enjoying it as much as we've been of talking about it, Dave, because it needs to be talked about. We know there's lots of doom and gloom in the world, and yes, we could talk about that on other times, but this evening, it's a little bit better, because we're just continuing with what we done last week, and we still had a few things to talk about for that time, because we didn't get everything in, so we thought we'd do it for this evening. So I think it's been so far I've enjoyed every second of it, and I think you have as well, Dave. Back to you, bruv.
Yeah, well, it's been a roller coaster of a show, and that's the kind of stories that we had for you guys. And next week we're going to be recognizing Father's Day. Very important day. You know, we have definitely fathers, grandfathers. Jeff's a great grandfather, and who knows? Maybe by next week he'll be a great great grandfather. Who knows? But it's very important to recognize that, and we will be back with that next week. And then on the 25th, everybody, come in and stand by for action, because we're going to be celebrating a certain podcast host's birthday. Not sure who that fella is, Jeff, but we're going to be celebrating his birthday. You know what I mean? Yeah, we're going to be doing that. And it'll be a nice.
Just looking around. I don't know. You know, it sounds familiar, Dave. Wonder who that could be. Back to you, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the jam are pointing their fingers, and I'm not going to let anybody in on who they're pointing their fingers at. But guys, yeah, please join us on the 25th as well as next week. Is always good stuff. And if you miss it, of course, it's saved in the archive at blogtalkradio.com. And many of these shows, by the way, are saved at my own. At my own page, the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com, and you'll hear more manageable versions of some of this stuff and some of the stuff that I do with Ken McClinton. My regular show times are 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday in the United States, and that is 6 p.m. in the U.K., and I have New to You shows on at midnight Eastern in the United States every week, and that is 5 a.m. in the U.K. So please check out the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. And, of course, I told you about the other stuff that we're doing. And, guys, it's been a heck of a show. Thank you, Bring It On Boy and Big E and Duff Northwest Media for being here with us. Hope all of you guys and Bring It On Boy's lady enjoyed the program. And we'll see what we can do for you again next week. I just want to say to everybody, be prosperous, be blessed, and no surrender ever. Jeff, the jam is getting antsy up here. They're ready to do some playing. So stop throwing those peanuts.
I just want to say
the word, buddy.
Bring Your Boy. He's just commenting on the last story about the gentleman or the veteran who found the kid. He said, and he's right when you think about it. He said he's so lucky they didn't accuse him of taking the kid. Yeah, we live in those times, but it's more tongue in cheek. He said that though, but he also says, "Dave, thanks guys, great show. And I'm glad you enjoyed it, brother. We love to know that our guys in the chat enjoy the shows as much as we do presenting them." So with that, Dave, that's you. My goodness mate, has the time really gone that quick this evening, Dave? Has it really gone that quick?
Yeah, it has, Jeff, and now it's time for the jam. They're misbehaving, so we got to get them to playing, so they'll stop throwing stuff. All right, okay, guys, take it away. God bless everybody. Good night, Jeff.
Good night, I'm too busy dodging through your flesh. Here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. It's usually the place you're trapped, and the lies will shut down and their promises come. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns, and the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give a tomorrow, la 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 la.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for that. And we'll see you next week. It's nice not having any peanuts to fix it. So that was great. Once again, we're at the end of the show. I've just got to do my final little bit now. And Dave, thank you very much. Great clips that you did this evening. Great slides. Kudos, brother. I really, really appreciate all the work that you do for our radio show. Really appreciate it. But as I say, we'll be back again. Same time, be Father's Day. We'll be celebrating Father's Day. My goodness me. Anyway, you'll take care. You stay safe. And God bless you all. And we'll see you next week. Good night, Al. See you soon. Oh, I'm just going to do this. This is the English Defence League radio show. We're going to sign off for this evening. And we will see you next Sunday. Have a good week. Take care. Stay safe. Good night, everybody.